大量に寄り添ったカップを巻かればまた暗渠に落ちていくよだ。何か見える何か響いてる答えてよ。
Hello and welcome back to a podcast that you won't need to pay $800 to experience. Welcome.
Only $400.
You're welcome to this. You paid for the premium service.
Hi, everybody.
This is how I get my anime figures, people. This is the only way it's happening.
Oh, yeah.
The only way it's happening.
They look really nice, but man, are they pricey.
There's some good cheap ones you can get these days, too. There's a good cheap market, too. It's just some of the ones that I want. Maybe are not the $28 figures that I also buy. Maybe they're more 10 times that.
Very specific.
I need Donna, okay? Look.
I felt that.
Welcome to episode 2 of Toad! Totally open anime discussion. And I am, of course, joined by my good friend who is worth way more than 800 PS5 Pros. It's Toad 22484.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing. I am worth more than almost pure trash, and I appreciate that.
If it's not obvious, we are recording this on the day of that great catastrophic announcement by Sony. But since we're not a gaming podcast, we'll just make very funny jokes about how Jeff Keighley's swinging on Sony's nuts like they're a jungle gym. How he's glazing Sony's asshole like it's a donut. Guys, I forgot to mention there may be a parental advisory on this podcast coming in.
Maybe a tiny one.
Tiny little bit. A little NSFW.
Maybe a large NSFW.
Maybe. Toad, how you doing? How you doing?
I'm feeling good. I'm doing good. Just doing my stream thing, huh? How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm ready to talk about some damn Japanese cartoons.
I am excited. The show had a lot going on.
Oh, my God. Like, let's just jump right into it. We have a lot to get to because this show is very dense. Especially episode one. Episode one is dense as hell. There's so much going on. They're introducing you to so much. They're introducing you to so many characters. And I'm going to help us break it all down as best that I can. So we start off, though. We kick the show off with an amazing intro. It's this jazzy little hip-hop influence number. It's simply called Odd Taxi. And it's composed by Skirt and DJ Poon P. Just an amazing, just immediate vibes. This whole sequence. Go ahead.
I'm so sorry. It like when we first like even dipped into the show, like the immediate song, the immediate look, and the immediate feel was all like just a pure vibe that it almost felt like comfy and like I was so hooked at what this was doing, and all I saw was like two frames so far.
Yeah, we just like even just got that opening shot of Odakawa standing with the taxi and this tune just going in the background. It's vibes. It like you immediately feel yourself relax in your chair and go to Comfyville when this opening theme comes on, and these the visuals are insane.
Oh god, yes, they were striking.
like reminded me of like a 90s Radiohead video or something, like where it's just like you've got these characters, like you're getting cool little introductions and snippets of the characters, and then there's like these crazy like transforming like wild shit. It's just insane looking, and it goes so well, like it, despite the fact that the visuals are so unhinged. Like the song is just still vibing along, dog.
Yeah, it's just like you're flowing with this. It's like a trip, really.
Yeah, like, it really is. Like, I know that that gets used a lot to describe really trippy things, and that it's like, oh, it's going there, did a lot of drugs. I know that that gets used a lot, but this really does feel like a trip. It also kind of reminds me a bit. And I know this won't be a reference you get because this is kind of like deep anime lore, like director stuff. Sure. But there's a director named Masaaki Yuasa who directs entire shows that look like this. And his work is phenomenal. And he wasn't involved on this project, but that's the vibe that this opening gave me. It's just a really striking introduction to like what this show is going to be.
Yeah, and like when you see Arakawa's face,
he's such a vibe.
He's so tired, and that is like
done with it. Like I've never seen a character that just immediately looks just no more done with it.
Yes,
it's like, dude,
it's so perfect.
You are such a vibe, Arakawa. We love you to bits already, and we haven't even started your show.
Yeah, we're still...
I love the little bit in the opening. It gets me every time where the bird poops on the windshield. He's, like, trying to reach it with his little stubby arm.
You're rooting for him every time, too.
He'll get it one day. Oh, I hope he gets it. I hope they change the opening for one episode and let him get it.
That would be... Honestly, maybe, like, the last one.
Yeah, like, the last episode, he finally gets it. That would be so cute.
I would love that, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, great opening. It really kind of sets the mood for like what you're going into. And then immediately the episode begins with a shot of what looks like a body that's wrapped in a tarp and chained to cinder blocks being thrown into a body of water. And we just see that shit float down. It's like, well, where'd the vibes go? What in the world?
Oh my god, that's right. I forgot it opened like that. That was phenomenal, because it was like the most lighthearted, happy thing.
And then we immediately go into, is this body disposal?
Yeah, because and this show has a lot of that, honestly, back and forth, really, really quick feeling of...
just tonal whiplash sometimes.
Tonal whiplash, yeah, that's the... perfect way to put it,
but it's not in a bad way. It always catches you off. It leaves you like you're always on the back foot with this show because you never know what vibe is coming next.
Oh yeah, because you'll just be hooked into one scene like completely, like it'll be like a tense scene, and then suddenly it'll just snap out with something really comedic or funny.
Oh, here's a weird comedy aside. Okay.
Yeah. And that'll go on for a while and you're just having a good time, and then bam. Like they really do pace it out well.
Yeah. It's amazingly paced throughout these first three episodes. They just do a great job of locking into a groove. I don't know that I've seen a show lock into a groove faster than this one. It's just really immediate. But then So I don't know if this is related or not, but like after the body sinks into the ocean, we see some bubbles float up, indicating breath, and then we cut immediately to our main character Arakawa waking up in his taxi coughing.
Oh, okay.
And I was just like, wait a minute, is that maybe related somehow?
True. Also, I don't know if this jumps ahead too much, but there's a lot of human flashbacks.
Oh, yeah, we will absolutely be getting to that. Despite the fact that everybody in this show is an animal, because the character we meet first is a walrus. He's a dumpy looking walrus.
He is.
He's just it's like walrus is literally like the perfect vibe for it's just the perfect like animal for this guy. Yeah. I've never seen a character just so immediately like, yeah, I know you, and I relate to you. And then, so he wakes up. Go ahead.
The only reason I bring that up is because mm-hmm. the body shape of what was going in looked like a human body.
That, yeah, like this is something we'll be coming back to a good bit. But over the radio, we hear that of an announcement that there's a high school girl that's gone missing. And so, like, within the first minute, the show's already packed so much into what's going on. But they're not done, like, packing your brain with details that are just going to kind of, like, be relevant later or be things that immediately catch your eye later. Because after that, there's another, like, little musical opening scene that's kind of a montage of like the world, the city, kind of like the nightlife and like what's going on. And there's this song that's being played by this idol group known as Mystery Kiss. While they show you some things that are going on. And this like really felt like where this really immediately made the show feel like cinematic to me. It's something I feel like where if like this were a movie, this is where the opening credits would be happening over this. Mm. Here's everything happening in the city right now. All of these weird things.
Mm-hmm. I honestly thought, I haven't watched Super Robot. Sorry. My mouth is speaking way too fast.
You're still learning to talk. Like we started this project so you could learn English through anime, but you're getting there.
Thank you.
After three episodes, you've made impressive progress.
I haven't watched much anime, but the visuals here were like really interesting and fun with how it was like, I think, kind of drawn and kind of animated, like together or something like that. Or just at least the style, the way it looked.
Yeah.
And like, just the way like everything is drawn is very specific, even like the characters. Mm-hmm. And like when you threw this first cinematic and they have this like gorgeous song, like the song was so beautiful.
It was really cute.
And we got to see the little dancers dancing. What is it? Nikaido?
But we don't know her yet, but yeah, like we know that, like we see some signage around. We know that the group's name, like there's some signage that we do see. It's, it's in Japanese, but it does say Mystery Kiss. That's the group. That's the group
Kiss.
That's performing during this opening. But there are some things that we see in this opening that do become very important very soon. And you can watch your chat here and I'll explain them, but I'll also show them to you. The first thing we get to see is we see a white gibbon fella. He's a janitor. Now, we know who this guy's going to end up being already. But the fact that he is a janitor is something they skip over a little bit. But we see it in this opening, and that's going to be very important for his story moving forward. We, of course, see there's a rather intimidating-looking baboon fella. He's polishing up a revolver. That's kind of menacing. That's like, all right.
That is frightening, yes.
It's like, well, okay, this show's taking a bit of a turn.
Yeah, it's... So again, the tone switches here early, even in like the images. It's just wild.
Even in this like cute anime opening with the cute girls singing and dancing. Oh, here's a dude with a gun.
Yeah, it's like, oh, and then you kind of almost start focusing more, even though you're enjoying everything and like all the visuals. But like they suddenly have this striking like story switch just because a character showed up with a gun.
And even more interesting, though, is another shot we see of what looks to be a female alpaca in a storage room putting something in a purse. We don't know what's going on here. We only flash to this momentarily. Think that might that might become pertinent in a bit as well.
Was this the news section? Was this on the news at this point?
No, this was just this was just in that opening scene.
This
all just got, they slipped that in there.
Wow.
Just like you don't even think about it. But when you're the one that's going back and writing the show notes, you notice things.
Yeah. God, yeah. That's, wow. Okay, okay.
Yeah, so, like, they show that, but this is not something that comes up till much later.
Mm-hmm.
So, finally, once that's all over, we finally get to meet Odakawa and a jovial little hippo man named Taichi Kamisawa hops into the back seat, and he's a terminally online weirdo, and he's got one major goal, Toad. What's his major goal?
He's got to go viral at any cost. Any cost.
And he's just
that home.
He's trying so hard. Like, this is the only thing that matters. Like, and this is our first time we kind of get a conversation going between Taichi and Odakawa. And it this is where you start with, oh wait, the dialogue in this show is already just super snappy.
Oh my goodness. This is where you like instantly fall in love with Odakawa, by the way. Like,
oh god, yes, instantly.
He comes out the gate banger after banger.
He's just,
my god,
he's just so tired of it. Like, he's just got some kind of answer for the, and it's not just like, he's not like the I'm too old for this shit kind of guy. He's just actively sassy and just like, dude, this just sounds stupid. What are you doing?
No, he's actually really smart, as we come to figure out throughout this show. He's actually, he's very interesting, which we'll also get into later.
Oh boy.
But for this first scene, also, Taichi is basically your annoying teenager kind of type that wants to go viral.
He wants to go viral. That's all.
But he's not like, it's not even annoying what he's doing. He's just kind of like in his own world, kind of doing his thing. And he actually does stumble upon it while we're in this scene, I believe.
Yes, you are not wrong. So he, in the end, like, Taichi, he takes a selfie with Odakawa, and he posts a tweet about it. So, and here's something fun that I only just found out, like, while I was putting together the show notes. But let me see here. There is a Twitter account. I'm not. This there's a Twitter account named @KBSW_T that made the exact tweet from the show 6 months before the show aired.
I love that.
It's the selfie that he took with Odakawa. God. And they put that together. They put that account and everything together 6 months before the show aired.
Oh, that's so awesome.
I had to look it up. I saw that they put his name on the tweet in the video, and I was like, there is no way. And it's like, yes, there is a way. They actually made the selfie tweet.
That's incredible. I see what it means now too. I love this.
Yeah,
it's
so cool. Like, it's such a cute little thing. So
it's such a good tie-in too.
It really
is. I love stuff like
that. I love it when like that happens with games and anime. You see it sometimes where they will like create character Twitters and like have them active a few months before something airs, and it's just like, oh, this has been here. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I know, that's great.
Yeah,
I appreciate you digging for something. This is great.
Yeah, like, this is cool stuff to know. So Taichi reaches his destination, and Odakawa is approached then by two identical looking cops who are meerkats, I believe. And we will come to know them as Big Daimon and Little Daimon. Big Daimon is basically a corrupt cop.
Yes.
He's kind of a bastard.
yes.
And Little Daimon, he seems kind of innocent right now. He seems to kind of just be the one that just, like, goes along with whatever his big brother's saying. Like, he doesn't seem actively involved in, like, whatever might be going on. He's just kind of trying to be a cop and following in his big brother's... well, I mean, they're twins, but obviously Big Daimon is obviously kind of the dominant of the two, so we kind of just consider him the big brother. But they're looking for the baboon we saw in the montage earlier, it turns out. And the thing is that Odakawa points out that, like, wait, you know, aren't you, like, already friends with this dude? Like, you know him.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm trying to, like, figure this part out overall again in mm-hmm. my brain.
Sure.
But I do remember him, of course, he was yelling at Lil Diamond again. Or not yelling, he was being very stern about a message about never believing in taxi drivers.
Don't trust taxi drivers. These guys, or at least Big Diamond, seems to have some kind of real hatred for taxi drivers.
Seriously, he's like, never believe.
Because he comes up a number of times to never believe anything a taxi driver says. And even though mm-hmm. he is specifically referring to Odakawa in this instance, there right. is an instance later where it is like, even like the little brother's like, yeah, never believe taxi drivers. So
yeah,
just
he
like,
goes off and like, you see the gaslighting. You see how horrible mm-hmm. Big Diamond really freaking is.
Big Diamond's kind of a jerk.
He's so bad, Diamond, sorry. Yeah, he's so bad.
And he kind of just brushes it off again, like you said, saying you can't trust anything a cab driver says. Mm-hmm. And this is the point where we're given the first flashback when, so I'm almost certain that every time we've seen a flashback, it's always been when Big and Little Diamond are around, too. So I think I would have to go back and see, but I'm pretty sure that the first, I think we see two flashbacks in these episodes, and I think they both happen when the Diamonds are around. But it's like a fuzzy flashback where, like, it's kind of, like, filtered in red. It looks like the scene... like it first looks like there's someone driving mm-hmm. and it's really hard to follow because again it's all grainy, it's very intentionally obfuscated and then it's followed by like there's a body sprawled on the ground but it looks like a human body
mm-hmm.
and all of the characters in this show are animals.
Yeah, this was like the biggest like moment early because I didn't think about the body the first time but mm-hmm. when they showed that I think we even said something for a second how they look like a human.
Yeah.
So we haven't seen anything.
Yeah, like, why is that?
I believe it was Odakawa is having these flashbacks mm-hmm. specifically. And he starts to, you know, get concerned.
Get weirded out by it. So it's just like, is this like something to do with his past or something? Mm-hmm. It's obviously a very weird thing to be throwing at you up front. So after that, like they go on their way and then Odakawa's off doing his thing again. And then, oh no, Taichi forgot his damn phone in the back seat. So it starts vibrating and he picks it up and he's like, dude, I left my phone, but could you check my tweet to see if it's doing numbers? And Odakawa gets a look at the picture and he's like, wait a minute. That fucking baboon dude's in the background.
Yeah, the zoom in with the baboon, and of course it looks right at the camera as menacingly as possible.
It's a very, very cool shot. I really like it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, weirdly enough, like right after that, we see a shot of that same baboon fella, and this is something they cut to very momentarily. We see Mr. Baboon meeting up with someone. Who appears to, again, be an alpaca-shaped person. So, again, that's curious.
Oh. See, I didn't notice this until you showed me now. That's very interesting.
This is another one of those things they just slip in. You do not think about this in the moment. But then you go, like, again, like, this is kind of the thing where, like, when you kind of almost have to watch the show twice to do the show notes. It's like, uh-oh. That's weird. Yeah. That is strange as hell.
Like, especially knowing about as much as we do about the alpaca.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, huh, okay.
So that just kind of happens... And they never say anything about it. They just kind of cut to the next morning of Odakawa being at his place. And he's watching the news, and of course, like, the schoolgirl's disappearance is all the rage. That's all they're talking about. But then something weird happens. He starts talking to someone. Odakawa starts talking to somebody who appears to be behind the sliding door behind him.
Yeah, when I first saw this, I thought it might be connected to the flashbacks that were pretty close to that. So I was like, huh, I wonder if, like lived or an accident.
Is he having a moment? Is he, like, is he having some kind of, like, weird mental break here? Because obviously what I think they're trying to signal here is, maybe the missing girl is here.
Yeah.
Because he asks if they're happy and tells them that they could run away at any time.
Yeah.
And he also mentions that they chose to stay there.
That is true. Multiple times. Yeah, that is very... And they... I don't think... Come back to this too. This is a very important point of the story, I'm assuming.
Yeah, like
very
this is a big important. This becomes a bigger important part of the like of why he's being investigated because people have heard him talking to himself.
That's
but
true.
He lives
that's
by true. Himself.
Huh. That's
So after that, Odakawa goes to the clinic where he seems to also be being treated for sleep issues. So this is something else I think that's probably going to play a role here. This comes up a number of times too, that he's being seen for having sleep issues. And this is where we actually finally meet Shirakawa, who is the alpaca nurse who we may or may not be seeing in these little asides that we've seen before. So this is the first time we get... This is the first time we meet Miho Shirakawa. And she's pleasant. I like her a lot. She's just immediately a fun, bubbly kind of personality. Very cute. Very engaging.
She's so adorable. That's her. She's adorable.
Absolutely. And so I'll do a little sidebar here. Because there's a bit... in this conversation that may have been completely lost on you if you are not familiar with what Rakugo is, which is, in simple terms, it's a solo performance of storytelling where the storyteller does all the voices and the narration, and they typically only have a fan to use as a prop. It's got a very nuanced history. It's a very Japanese thing, but it is still practiced today. There are, like, even English Rakugo performers now and stuff like that. So it's kind of a dying art, but it's also being kept alive by people that, you know, really want to keep tradition alive. And there's a lot of history to it. And a sidebar, if anybody wants to experience a show that is entirely dedicated to the art of Rakugo, I wholeheartedly recommend Showa Genroku Rakugo Shinju. It is full of Rakugo performances, which are really awesome, and it is incredible drama. Like, it is one of the best anime dramas I've ever seen. So
I like to hear that.
So if anybody wants to check out something that's just really interesting and dedicated to this one specific art form and traces it through a couple of generations and the drama that goes along with that, the name of the show is Showa Genroku Rakugo Shinju. It's very, very good. Very, very good. But I just kind of wanted to get that out there in case, like, you were kind of lost about what they were talking about there, because they spend like 3 or 4 minutes talking about Rakugo and, like, the stories and, like, listening to it on cassettes, and it's just a very kind of weird scene if you're not plugged into Japanese culture a little bit.
No, I didn't see or I didn't know anything about that, so I honestly had no idea what they were conversating. I was kind of like watching them while they were conversating.
But that's what they were talking about, so that's something he's really into, is listening to that and listening to, like, the comedy duo on the radio, the Homo Sapiens. They're fun. You get a lot of that.
I love the Homo Sapiens.
They're so cool. So in this exchange, there's also this really weird moment that's not followed up on any of the three episodes that we've seen. But Shirakawa mentions that she has this one-of-a-kind eraser.
Yeah.
And it's shaped like a popular Rakugo performer named Master Donraku. And she just casually slides it into his shirt pocket for some reason. She just does it, and they don't say anything about it. She just does it. And I don't know whether that's like, if she's just like planning something, or I don't know if that's suspicious, or if it's just, you know, something that she's doing to be nice, because she has like obviously she has an interest in him. Like we can say that, like, sure. Like she's interested in him to some degree, which we'll find out more about in a bit. And during this conversation, there's also something that, like, when we were talking about human form, like when we're talking about the accident and the flashback that we saw earlier, this is where we start seeing references to We Are the World, and they start talking about like Stevie Wonder and Bruce Springsteen and Cyndi Lauper, and it's just like, well, okay, do they exist in this world? Are they like animals too? or is this like a hint that maybe something's going on?
Yeah, it seems, as the clues mount up, for sure, it seems like something else is afoot, especially with the flashbacks coming in.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of main, like, pop culture references, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very curious to see how the animals part of this plays into this.
Yeah, because it's, I think that on the nose, you're supposed to be questioning this already.
Yeah.
I don't think that they would show us the body being a very human-like shape if they didn't want us already thinking, like, well, what does this animal stuff mean then? Like, what is this all about? I think it's, like, they put that out there. I think they put that out there on purpose. I think they want us to be questioning that already.
It's tasty bait.
It is. It's very good. It's very good. I would like to know what most of these animals taste like. Sure. Why not? Never eaten alpaca before.
Hey.
I bet Odakawa might.
Oh,
hey.
that's a big tongue.
It's a sex joke for those who don't understand.
Sex.
Yeah. Yeah. It's NSFW there. Big old NSFW signpost there, Toad.
Flashing neon. NSFW.
Gotta be 18. Gotta be 18 to listen to this podcast. So, after he's done at the clinic, Odakawa is once again accosted by Big Daimon. Oh, he's there again.
Oh, yeah, he comes back again. Quite a bit.
He's just around a very uncomfortable amount.
Yeah.
And he informs Odakawa that they have information that may tie him to the case of the missing girl. And through a weird kind of like, hey, let me search your car, I don't really know how that works. Maybe it works different in Japan. He's just like, well, if you got nothing to hide, let me search your damn car. And he just lets him do it. I don't know. Maybe Japan.
Yeah, I don't know that.
Maybe Japan works differently. I don't know that, you know, that kind of like search and seizure is something you can do. But I have a suspicion that whether it's legal or not, Mr. Daimon was going to do what he was going to do anyway.
Of course, I don't think
that Odakawa really had much of a say, but
police.
He confiscates an SD card containing his dash cam footage, which would just be like all the people that has been in his cab. I think they said it was what for like the last 2 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes the card and he tells him to not go to the police about it, or a criminal armed with a gun might kill him. So, okay, yeah. Crooked fucking cop.
Yeah, crooked cop. Weird as hell thing going with Odakawa talking about his whatever in his apartment.
Yeah, like, it's, what do you think? Do you think he's tied to the disappearance? Because I think they're, like, I can't tell if they're baiting us into just thinking that, Or if maybe he really is tied to it somehow.
Right. It play with it well, and they talk about it with one of the other characters later is when I really think it'll be interesting to talk about Odakawa's tie-in with a Big Daimon.
Yeah. Like, what's going on there? And like, Big Daimon is obviously involved with another character who is going to make a very flashy appearance in the back of the cab later. But there's a lot going on there that's very interesting. Like, they are putting pressure on him. But it's just, like, I can't figure out, like, okay, if it's, like,
it's the like if Big Daimon is involved with the police, like why don't like and they're trying to like get a hold of a girl that's missing, why don't we want the police involved? Like that's so interesting.
That is really big.
It's very shady. It's just like, okay, it's like makes me wonder if like this isn't like a disappearance but like a kidnapping. And maybe somebody kind of foiled that, maybe. I don't know. It's just a very interesting way that they're presenting this that keeps you thinking, like, like somebody, like, who's hiding what? Who's covering up what?
And again, Odakawa is so naturally calm in situations, which always makes me really interested about him as well.
He's just like, kind of like, yeah, okay, like, well, what if I do talk to people? I could just talk to anybody right now. And they're like, yeah, that might not be so good for you. But yeah, like, it's very, very tense. So Odakawa's got himself into something, and like, I think I got a feeling it's going to be a while before we figure out what. But so the scene changes then to we meet in a small diner for the first time, and we meet the white gibbon janitor from the montage earlier. His name is Kakihana Eiji, and poor guy just seems to be unlucky in love. He's never going to get married, Toad. It's never going to happen.
He seems to also be a master of it at the same time. But
right?
Yeah.
He knows everything about marriage.
But it's just never going to happen for him at the same time. Like, he's just in a rut, this janitor.
Literally asks the shop owner if she'd marry him. And she's like, yeah. Dude, no. Straight up, no. You're a joke. And I love it. He's just like, well, is it the money? And she's like, look, money's kind of a part of it. You gotta have money to like live somewhere.
You're right.
Like, I don't think she's entirely unfair about it.
No, that's completely understanding, especially since he just came up and asked her.
Yeah. Very, like, man, just shoot your shot, I guess.
Hey, that's a really aggressive first shot.
Yeah. But he's also on his phone. He's trawling a dating app. And he's, you know, lying on his profile about his income. You know, like you do.
Of course.
He puts in his profile that he makes 20 million yen a year, which is about $140,000 a year. That's what he puts as his annual income.
Okay, that's a lot.
That's quite a bit. This guy's looking to reel him in. So that's what he's put on his dating profile. Hard to say if anybody will bite. Maybe, who knows? Anyway, the doctor, Odakawa's doctor comes in, big gorilla fella. And they just kind of have they sit down and they just kind of have a really fun chat about, man, Odakawa is kind of really weird, huh? Isn't it weird how he's like sarcastic all the time and hates everybody?
Yeah, it's like he's so sarcastic, and she's like, well, maybe, you know, I think she's talking about the stress of his life in the situation. Mm-hmm. And like, of course, he feels that way. And Goriki, is that's her name, right?
Yeah, it's the doctor.
Goriki, yeah, he's he doesn't have time for that nonsense.
No.
So he's just like, screw that.
It's whatever, dude. I don't care. I am a doctor, but your problems are ones that I cannot diagnose. So at this point, Dr. Goriki gets a phone call from another nurse, and she tells him that even more psychotropic medications are missing, and they're missing about 6,000 pills in total.
Yeah, that was a wild amount of pills.
That is so many pills. So obviously, the shot that we got earlier was Shirakawa in the room putting pills in her purse.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to, like, so I don't think that she stole 6,000 pills at once. I think she's, if she's the one stealing them, she's stolen 6,000 in total, is what I think. But that is so many pills. And like, okay, so if she's meeting in if she's having a meeting somewhere with Baboon Dude, like, okay, is she like a supplier or like it's like what's going on with her?
Yeah, I get like she doesn't even come off ever shady as she talks,
right?
But I think that's part of what makes her charm so effective. So.
Yeah. Like, she might actually kind of be more shady than she's letting maybe.
Especially with these cutscenes, oh yeah.
Yeah, or maybe also, like, there's the fact, like, maybe she's being forced to do this, because obviously
True.
Somebody might know that she is a nurse and that she would have access to these things, and, I don't know, we know Baboon Dude has a gun.
He does have a gun. They make that very clear.
Yeah.
Quite often.
So, but yeah, so and after this is when Shirakawa finally goes out and she gets a ride from Odakawa and they have a nice little conversation together and she sings him a little song and everything.
He's just cute. Oh my God.
Their dynamic is so immediately engaged. It's so immediately adorable. I love them together already.
They're perfect. I cannot get enough of that little conversation, especially when she started to be like, of course I like you. And he's like, why? Why?
Why?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
There's also,
the song.
There's also like, I'm going to go back to the human thing again, too, because there is a line that stuck out here very like a sore thumb to me, even the first time, because nobody else in the show had said anything like it. When they first start talking, she mentions something about, like, him being around these parts. And he's like, well, it's funny you say that. You're the only alpaca I see around here. And she just laughs it off. And they move past that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So,
that
like,
was incredibly quick. I did.
They just sneak that in? And
that
I don't know.
Is.
Again, I don't know whether that means anything.
Ooh,
but
okay.
That was just weird to me that he very specifically says, you are the only alpaca I've seen around here. And she just, like, laughs that off and then starts on another train of thought. And I'm just like, wait a minute. Like, are we doing it? Are we... Like, I can't tell if they're messing with me about this animal thing or not.
There's so much messing in all the dialogue in this.
It just stays so damn like you don't know whether you're being messed with or whether it's just like or you're super smart for picking up the pieces. You're picking up the crumbs, you're putting them in the bowl and you're like, all right, I'm gonna have a full cake here soon.
But it's kind of adorable seeing her kind of break him down about how she likes him, which is also kind of scary to see how fast and quick she can do that.
Yeah. Like, we don't know how long they've had a rapport with one another.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we do know that he knows her age, so, like, they've probably talked a while because, like, we don't know how long he's been going to the clinic. So, obviously, that's where she met him. So it's just like they could have probably had like a rapport long before
True.
This, but maybe she didn't start kind of being more actively around him out of the office until recently. So I think that that's kind of like where I'm going to sit with it. I think that maybe they've just kind of like known each other for a bit, but now they're kind of like getting closer. This episode ends with a shot of Big Daimon meeting with our baboon friend. And we see him, and we see them make a little exchange, an envelope for the SD card. So now, Baboon Man is the one who's holding the SD card. And that's where that episode ends.
It was very quick, too, right after all that conversation.
Right.
That really lured you in, and then boom, right here at the end, and then boom, credits.
They
like,
do that so many times where they will slide a little scene in, like
that jump
like
scare.
When they get like when they get you in like engrossed in that little conversation that Odakawa and Shirakawa are having, and it's like, oh, this is really nice. And then they like, oh wait, whoa. Then they end the episode on that moment of intrigue. Like, what the hell? Okay, why? Okay, so now you've got the dash cam footage. Okay, why would you have that?
Yeah, the monkey being connected to the police, and the monkey being shown as this killer threat basically is like, oh, everything is corrupt is happening right now, especially with the way Big Daimon acted in that episode.
Oh God,
what a bully!
Like, he is just like all over, just like, oh, you are the sussiest Baka. So that's all in all a great first episode. Like, I don't know that they could have made a more fascinating hook. Like, that first episode, like, I remember both of us just being like, dude, that was incredible.
I was like, I don't often watch a pilot episode and be like, well, I love this show. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't like view this as a pilot as it's a one story.
Sure, sure, sure.
But this, the first episode, like, when it landed on that hook after all these, like, really nice, tight conversations. And then there's like, well, there's still a little bit more. Here's a little, like, nibble more. And it just brings you in. I was hooked right after the first episode. The art, the way the characters interact is so important in the show. And it's so good.
The writing is so good. Like, the dialogue does not feel like standard anime writing to me. It feels very Western. In the way that it's quick, it's snappy, it's quippy, it's just there is a kinetic energy to the way that conversations happen in this show, where they just keep things going and it feels, I don't want to say natural, because it still feels very acted, it still feels very drama-y, but there's just a way that the dialogue kind of bounces back and forth between characters, and like everybody feels like they know each other. It doesn't feel like these are characters learning to know each other. It just kind of feels like everybody is already comfortable with one another. You don't feel like anything is amiss about these relationships. It's all pretty believable.
It's like we've like snuck in the middle of this
like we popped in
that's happening
like we are just now popping into this world that is already established. It has its history. Everybody feels like they're interacting with one another, like especially like in the tavern where everybody was bouncing back and forth and like that, just those little moments where everybody just feels comfortable with one another, because these people just have these interactions all the time. It feels really believable, and the dialogue is just fun and genuinely funny.
Oh God, there's so many funny moments in the show. It really catches you off guard because it's so like silly too, like just like complete silliness out of the blue, and you're like, oh,
like, okay, yeah. Like, again, it's so good at juggling those moods, and that feels great to be able. Like, that's always a thing for me too. Is like I am very sensitive to like shows and how they bounce back and forth between moods, because it sometimes just rips me right out. And this is a show where everything kind of just feels completely tied together. Like, they've managed to keep the level of drama and the level of comedy, like, right even with one another, so that they never feel like one is louder than the other when they take the stage. They always feel like they're locked at the same volume.
I 100% agree. That is a perfect description of how this show was run.
All right. So, moving on to episode 2. Episode 2 starts in a sauna, and it's got a great fart song playing. I've come to call it the fart song. It's just I'll play a little bit of it here when I do the editing, but it's just so like throughout this whole scene, I just like I was like, they can't keep playing this song.
They kept going, and it's like, what is happening?
and it fits. It fits the scene, because the scene opens. They're in a sauna. Otakawa and Kakihana. They're in a sauna, and they're talking about. Otakawa's just like, I got Chirikawa's number after I gave her a taxi ride. And he's a little jealous. He's feeling a little out of sorts. He's not too happy about that. But they're also joined. There's another fella in that sauna. He is a mysterious black taper. Don't know who this guy is, but this guy is kind of just always hanging around the sauna.
Yeah.
Like, every time we see the sauna scene, this guy is there. We don't have a name for him. We don't know what his deal is, but he's just always there.
He's a present.
Yeah. And again, I love how Kakihana is just so jealous. He's just like, well, yeah, she probably just wants free taxi rides. That's all. She doesn't like you. And then he's just like, nah, dude, she literally asked me out.
Yeah, that kind of like, look.
And we get to see, like, that the conversation, too. Like, because they flash back to these two being in the cabin. There's, like, this long, like, 2-minute silence between them while, like, the comedy show's just playing on the radio. And they're just like, yeah. Like, they're just being quiet. And then there's this long silence followed by Shirakawa asks him, like, why he can't sleep. And he just replies that I just forgot how. And that's an interesting thing.
An interesting way to word that. I forgot how.
I forgot how to sleep.
Huh. Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that makes it sound more like, you know, somebody's almost trapped in their own world that they can't actually wake up from.
This is something that when we started kind of going down that road of like, is there maybe a human element here?
Yeah.
It's like, is the fact that like maybe he can't sleep is because like maybe like you can't sleep because you're already sleeping, or it's something like that? Is that what we're doing here? Or are we doing? Is this like a whole mental thing going on?
Is the mystery missing person maybe more connected to the outer part than, like, you know, it's really interesting.
If he is talking to the quote unquote missing person, then they never responded. So it's just like, if that's something on the outside, then like, he's not communicating on the outside. He's communicating on the inside, but the person is on the outside. Maybe there's something like that going on. Who knows? But there's a lot. They leave a lot for your brain to gnaw on with this show. Jesus Christ.
Yes.
I love how they bring up like she asks him if like there's anybody he likes, and he's like, I'm just too old for that crap. And then he's like, well, do you like anyone? And she's like, I don't know how to describe him. And he's like, well, you got a picture? And she's got a picture of him, and she shows it to him, and it's so sweet.
It's one of the cutest scenes in the whole show. Oh, it's sweetest.
My definitely heart melted. It was so genuine.
I love a nice little spot like that.
Yeah.
That was so wholesome.
So we're back in the sauna and they're talking about, well, like, I guess your parents are going to be glad you found a girlfriend. And he responds, and Odakawa responds with like, you know, like he would rather show the people who paid his living expenses after his parents left that he's happy. So we now know that like something happened with Odakawa's parents and that he was raised by somebody else.
Yes.
So I thought that was an interesting little thing that they tucked in. I don't know if it's going to mean anything, but it's just like, oh, you're giving us some more information on Odakawa and kind of like who he is and how he grew up. All that fun stuff.
Yeah, the big background. Like his, with the flashbacks and the accident and everything, and Odakawa's, my brain is, he needs a moment to formulate these things. And the childhood aspect, I'm curious to see if, since they're bringing his parents into this, if his parents are going to be one of these other animals that show up, or if they are some connection to some relation.
Yeah, like are they in any way related, or are they just kind of giving us some background information here? So, another thing, I don't know if it's important or not, but like on the way out of the sauna, Kakihana takes a picture of Odakawa getting dressed by the lockers.
God, that's right.
But then our boy, he strikes it. He gets a notification on his dating app from a cute little calico cat girl named Shiho, who seems interested in his profile. He did it!
Ooh, he did snagged it, all right.
He snagged someone.
Yay.
Go, Kakihana. Let's do it.
cocky, huh? You just gotta keep trying, you know?
There you go. Hey, you know what? Fake it till you make it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We also get another aside of, for some reason, Taichi, an update. He's not gone viral since his hit tweet, unfortunately.
Oh, poor Taichi.
But I love that he's got his hit tweet on his wall.
Yeah.
It's very, very cute. He's got what's it got? Let's see here. It's got like, it's got 200, it's got a little over 200 retweets. It's got 3,500 likes. 82
comments.
He's doing good.
Dude, that's great. And he can build a foundation off that.
There you go, man. Just build your brand. He's building his brand.
I love it. He's trying anyway.
He's doing it. He's going to make it. So,
I believe.
From this point, we switch now to the idol group that we've been hearing and seeing in the background. It's Mystery Kiss time.
Ooh. I love Mystery Kiss. They have great music and they're adorable on
stage.
They're
adorable. Yeah. Just look at them. How could you not? Yeah. How could you not be enraptured? I'm going to be there. I'm going to buy the debut single. Day one. So the group consists of three members. We've got Rui Nakaido, who I think she's a toy poodle. I think that's what she's supposed to be. She's very poodle looking.
Definitely poodle.
Yeah,
I don't know why I said that three times. Poodle
is a in writing these notes, I found that poodle is actually a fun word to say, and I don't know
it
why.
Is.
Poodle. Like it's just there's something about that dull word. Poodle.
Poodle.
Poodle. It's just, I don't know. Poodle. It's a fun word.
I kind of love it. Poodle.
Poodle. And like and her being a toy poodle is even cuter. Because toy poodles are just tiny. They don't even get to be a foot tall.
No, they're the tiniest little tiny puppers.
Yeah. So she's like a tiny little puppo. But alongside her, she has two masked cat girls, one Shiho Ichimura and Yuki Mitsuya. So something, this is just going to be a dumb Japanese language thing that jumped out to me when I was writing these notes, is that I immediately noticed that the first syllable of each of their last names, if you put them together, there's a 1, 2, and a 3. So Shiho Ichimura, Ichi, is 1. Rui Nakaido, Ni, is 2.
Oh.
Yuki Mitsuya, Mi, is traditional or traditional older Japanese for 3, even though they use San now. Mi is 3. So for some reason, their last names each start with a number, and there's like a 1, 2, and a 3.
Huh. Okay.
And Ichimura, of course, may look a little familiar, even with her mask, because that's the girl who messaged Kakihana on the dating app. Our boy is lucky. He's got himself an
lucky
idol.
Dog.
He got an idol girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Let him go. And we also meet Superfan. We meet a Superfan. He's named Imai. He's a skunk boy, and he's very excited. He's the biggest fan.
He's such a huge fan. He's almost too much of a fan, one might say.
Well, yeah, it's almost like this feels a little. But of course, Rui does not help this at all because she's leaning into it because she's making like she's giving him like the special treatment. Like he's getting a hug, he's getting an autograph. Like he says that he's a waiter, but he promises he's going to get rich and he's going to buy all their merch and he's going to make them rich. So.
Yeah, she is either, you might say, running him along, or maybe she just genuinely likes
maybe
him.
Maybe she's just a nice little...
It's
like, she's
a kind
a poodle.
Soul.
She's
yeah.
a poodle.
Toy poodle.
Toy poodle.
Poodle.
Just, poodle. Just keep saying yeah. poodle. Look at
poodle.
Poodle.
Poodle cast.
Poodle. Poodle cast. I don't know why that word is so fun to say!
I don't either, but... I hashtag poodle, everybody.
Hashtag poodle. Everybody go to Twitter right now. Hashtag poodle. But things don't seem to be going well for the group because it's really not a lot of people at the event. It seems like they have 5 fans who religiously follow them everywhere, unfortunately.
And there's also some obvious hard feelings within the group, as Rui seems to be the focus, while Ichimura and Mitsuya kind of say that, like, nobody cares about them because they get sent outside to, like, hawk leftover merch.
Yeah, and they're not even allowed to remove their masks.
Yeah,
at all.
They're not allowed to remove their masks either, even for photographs. So it's unclear if this is their manager kind of doing this, who's like this large, intimidating fox dude. His name's named Yamamoto.
Yeah, he's very large
and intimidating, but he is their manager, yes. And he seems very. It seems like he may be the one kind of like putting Rui kind of at the front of this group, and everybody playing like second fiddle. And when they go outside, Shiho and Yuki kind of have this conversation that's a little depressing.
Oh, God.
But we also find out that Shiho used to be an idol too, as a maskless performer, but now she's here for some reason. We don't really know much about that. She mentions that she used to perform without a mask. Yeah.
Okay.
She also mentions her parents never supporting her. It's really sad.
That is horrendously depressing.
Yeah, Yuki mentions, like, I was raised with love. And Shiho's just like, yeah, my parents never supported me. It's like,
she's
Jesus.
So casual about it, so yeah.
Oh, yeah, she's so casual about it. But maybe she's gonna end up lucky in love, it sounds like. She's found somebody on the dating side, at least. Maybe that'll turn out for her.
Mm-hmm.
So back inside, Rui and Yamamoto, they're having a private meeting, and this is kind of where we get the feeling that maybe Rui is not the happy, bubbly idol girl that she claims to be. She seems to kind of just be like, yeah, all this sucks. Why don't we have more numbers? Why do we only have the same 5 fans? I don't know. Like, we don't get a lot of her here, but I kind of get the impression that she's kind of going to maybe be a shitter. I'm getting a feeling that she just might be a bit of a shitter.
I think he has that diva personality that's just waiting to be unleashed by popularity.
Yeah. Yeah. She's about to turn into a fame goblin.
But
Yamamoto receives a call, and it's very clearly tied to the disappearance case. So this is another person that is being roped into the disappearance case. Mm-hmm. And it's being tied to the disappearance case because both Otakawa and the dash cam footage are mentioned. And Rui asks him about it, and she's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, don't worry about it. So I don't know, like, he's not wanting them involved. So that's interesting. So she's clearly not involved with whatever shady dealings, because now we know, like, this manager guy is also in on whatever this disappearance is.
Yeah, this whole triangle of where the hell did that lady go?
Yeah. And so it's just like there's a lot going on here. Again, we're gonna say that a lot these 3 episodes. We don't know what that means yet.
Mm-hmm.
But there's obviously, they're planting seeds, and we know something's crazy going on here with the idol group. Definitely some weird things going on there. But our skunk boyfriend, he needs a ride to Shinjuku, and he's able to swindle a ride. He's able to swindle one out of Otakawa.
Oh, good old Otakawa.
He's a pushover. He's like, dude, I ain't got the money to get there. I ain't got the money.
Okay, I was like, whatever. Just kidding.
And like the whole time he's just gushing about Mystery Kiss and how, like, they've got 5 whole fans and I'm one of them. It's like, dude,
yeah, I'm the best one.
He thinks he's gonna get rich, and he thinks he's gonna I guess he has aspirations to have Rui all to himself,
of course.
Sounds of it.
As all those relationships tend to be.
Yeah, I don't know if this is going to go like weird stalkerish kind of stuff. and she is unfortunately kind of, you know, played into it a little too much.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a lot of weird stuff going on there with Mystery Kiss, and that's probably, I don't know what they're going to have to do with any of this, but if I've learned anything from shows like this, it's like when characters start kind of mingling in and out of storylines, they're going to wrap together and it's all going to come crashing together in a weird fucking way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I can't wait, honestly.
Yeah, like, wait. I just like wondering, like, what the hell's the idol group gonna have to do with this?
Yeah, well, with such a low amount of fans, maybe. Right.
Like, what is? Because obviously, maybe. Like, what I think is that, like, okay, shady manager, maybe he's trying to pull some ties to like help get at least Rui famous. Like, maybe that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe he's doing some dirt to try and get
really
her famous.
Marketable, or Solo's more marketable, or whatnot. Rui, get your ass out there, you toy poodle.
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 Poodle. Poodle.
Poodle.
Poodle. Poodle. I don't know why, dude. I don't know why.
I don't know either.
So before getting out of the cab, Mai asks Odakawa to pick his 7 favorite numbers. And he pulls out his phone and he looks at the picture that was taken in the locker room with all the locker numbers on it. And he just picks, and I don't know if these numbers are going to come back, but he's just like, all right, Mai says he's going to play the lottery. So I imagine he's going to play these numbers. And the numbers that he picked were 2, 10, 12, 18, 20, 32, and 33. So I looked that damn locker picture over and over and over, and I could not find any kind of, like, I thought, oh, well, maybe it's the ones that don't, like, have tags on it or something, but it's just, I don't know, it just appears that he chose those numbers at random. That's the only, I thought maybe that there would be, like, if I connected those numbers somehow in the picture, maybe, you know, that would lead to something. But no, it kind of just looks like he picked the numbers at random and they just kind of wanted a visual aid for him to pull numbers from, I guess.
Yeah, it seemed like a snarky way to kind of lit the stuff. But also, the viral picture was also just supposed to be for a viral picture.
Exactly. So if, like, if this, like, comes back, like we don't know if this is going to mean something or not, or if this is something this will come back. So, After Mai gets out finally, Odakawa finally gets a chance to meet the comedy duo on the radio, Homo Sapiens.
Let's go, Homo Sapiens.
Shibagaki and Baba. They're very fun. They have a very fun conversation about, like, who's popular, who's not. Oh, you're the old one, you're the young one. It's just a very fun back and forth about, like, who's the popular one. And, like, it's a Baba just seemingly just, like, really down on himself. Just like, nobody likes me.
Everybody thinks he's not funny at all.
Everybody thinks, like, he's not funny at all. And then... and then during the ride, he gets a call and it's just like, hey, you got a regular gig on a daytime cooking show now. It's like... So he ends up being the popular one.
Oh, yeah, but the whole conversation, and Odakawa was like, I think he told them to just be themselves.
Yeah.
And then they had that argument.
Yep.
Or no, you didn't have an argument. It was just Shibagaki pushing Baba, essentially.
Yeah. Like, he's just trying to, like,
angry.
Yeah, he's,
and
literally,
it was funny.
Yeah, and it was really funny a little bit.
It was great.
Again, like, it's a testament to the writing. It's just these funny little conversations that are just more one-off than anything. They're fairly compartmentalized, but they're just really good, funny, fun conversations. So Baba's got a gig now. Good for him.
Good job, Baba.
Good job, Baba. I had faith in you. I always thought you were funny.
Yeah. Baba Poodle.
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 Poodle. So the episode ends with another passenger sliding into the back seat, and this passenger has a little bit of a surprise.
He pulls out
a gun. He pulls out the heat. He pulls out the strap.
Pulls out a huge He pulled out a huge gun.
He got the huge handgun. It's the baboon fellow we've been seeing around.
Mm-hmm.
And the episode ends with Otakawa getting a text from Shirakawa saying that she'll be waiting for him in the park across from the clinic. And that's just kind of where the episode drops.
Yeah, right away. And it's like, oh, here comes the gun feller. And done. It's like, done.
No! Cannot imagine watching this week to week, like actual episode to episode. Yeah. Like, I know we're doing 3-episode chunks, which is already driving me nuts. But we can only do so much. We can only talk about so much in one podcast,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
You know, like, if this were me, I would be binging this show. Like, probably in one day, because it's that intriguing. Like, this is a show that if I was left to my own devices, and I bet you would too, right?
Oh god, yes, that's fun. Absolutely, I would have been done.
Yeah, like we would have been yapping about this show like the very next day.
Yes. 10-hour podcast.
Yeah, there you go. So that episode ends, and we start into our last episode for the week. Then episode 3 begins. It's a great scene. This episode begins with Kakehana. He is in the sauna, and he's fawning over Ichimura's profile on the dating app. And he hears the black taper begin to talk. And he starts talking about, like, hey, do you know the driver's name? And he's just like, wait, what? It's like, and this taper dude starts talking about the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, and he's just like, wait, what? Why are you talking to me about this?
Yeah, he was like, why? Like, it's just out of the blue.
He thinks he's the one being talked to about the missing person case in Otakawa.
It's just a random person in the sauna.
And he's just, like, having this two-way conversation. But, like, the taper's actually on the phone. He's got a head. He's got a little earbud in, and he's talking. Mm-hmm. He's talking to someone who we find out it's the baboon fella.
Oh, the baboon.
So we get a lot of information out of this conversation, which also means that Kakehana gets a lot of information out of this as well. And I don't know what that means for him having this information or if they're going to play it's with true. That. But he gets a lot of information, and I'll boil it down here for you. All the information he gets. This is big, because this is where I feel like they're putting a lot of the pieces out there for you to start thinking about. Mm-hmm. So he says that he's looking for information on Otakawa because he knows the missing girl got into his cab, and that was the last time she was seen.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual investigation to her whereabouts actually seems to have been called off, because they received a secondhand message from her, not directly from her. It was secondhand from somebody that she'd run away.
Oh.
And then the black tapir says that he himself is apparently the reason she ran away.
Oh.
He also mentions.
That's really interesting.
He also mentions that she's Don Chan's daughter. So Chan is a that is an honorific typically used for someone you are familiar with in Japanese. So I would call you Toad Chan if we had that kind of relationship.
Oh, right.
Now, somebody was called Don earlier in the series. Now, I don't know if I'm making the right play here, but there was a character earlier when we were talking about Rakugo named Master Don Raku.
Yes.
I'm wondering, okay, is this Rakugo master who we're talking about, is this his daughter?
Huh.
We don't know who this guy is. We've never seen him, but we've heard that name. So I'm just saying, I think Don Chan might be short for Don Raku.
I could see that. I could see that.
And so, again, I don't know what they're going to do. And again, the thing that I, like, what are they going to do with Kakehana overhearing this guy? Are they just going to kind of, like, you know, let him be stupid and just kind of like, oh, well, I was just being an idiot? Or is he going to actually maybe, like, because now he has information. He knows people are looking for Otakawa.
Right.
So he's heard somebody talking about Otakawa. So it's, I'm just, like, wondering if maybe that's going to be anything that comes into play. at all. So, do you have any thoughts on all that, or?
I'm trying to catch up on all that.
it's so much. I'll even put the notes in the chat for you that I grabbed for that, just so you can mull that over real quick.
I appreciate that.
There's so much going on there with so many people are tied to what feels like Yakuza activity, I guess.
Yes, definitely. Especially with the Black Taper giving the boss vibe for sure.
Yeah.
I also like the dual conversation with Kakehana, and then like it's all goofy and silly, and then it gets super serious when it switches over to the baboon.
Then they show that same conversation from Dobu's point of view. We're just gonna go ahead and call him Dobu. Yeah. I don't know if anybody said his name at this point, but I'm tired of calling him Baboon Fella.
Yeah,
it's Dobu.
Yeah. It's Dobu. Like Dobu.
I just got tired because I tried to like not say anybody's name until they're directly identified, but like, damn it, I'm tired of saying Baboon Fella.
I'm with you on this.
All right, so back in the cab after that conversation, though,
mm-hmm.
Odakawa is being questioned by Dobu, and during this conversation, Odakawa, like, you know, they're having that, you know, he's pressing him and stuff, but then Odakawa presses the distress button on his cab that shoots up an SOS lamp on the top of his cab, which that's to let passersby, especially police, know that you're in trouble.
Yes.
In this conversation, Dobu mentions that officially the police suspect him being involved with whatever happened to this girl and her disappearance. And Odakawa's like, well, that's weird. Like, you are literally friends with a police officer. Like, why would they think that you've got something to do with this?
This is also the first time I saw Odakawa really, like, he sees that nervous front,
he's shaking.
That, like, he's got the gun behind him, and then he just starts talking to Dobu.
Yep.
Like, it's another conversation, like, he's in complete control. Yeah, like, this is why Odakawa is very interesting.
He's a very cool, like, just to be so underprepared. He even mocks him at some point. It's like, dude, you're not gonna shoot me. You've got pride.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You've got too much pride. He's like, you may be a criminal, but you've got pride. You're not going to kill anybody. So I'm wondering now if Dobu is that kind of character that's just like, he's going to make those threats and he's going to try and be mean, but when it comes down to it, he just does not have it in him to actually kill someone.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm wondering if that's going to be something that kind of plays a role later.
Yeah. I don't think we've seen anybody shot yet.
No.
Or heard anything.
Nobody's really been hurt yet. Like, there's just a lot of allusions to it.
Mm-hmm.
So Dobu suspects that there's one person who may have actually put this girl up to running away, and it's someone we only get a name for named Yano. And he says that it's his junior in whatever criminal business that they're in together. And basically, Dobu explains that he's like the money collection guy for the boss.
Yeah.
And that Yano is obsessed with collecting more money. So they're just kind of at odds. It sounds like Yano is just kind of like a hothead that just is kind of like, you know, like, he's very, very out for himself. And like, Dobu is just not cool with that.
Yeah. Dobu seems to have a lot of interest with Odakawa as well.
Yeah.
But in general, seems to have a very interesting agenda that I don't think we've seen much into yet.
Yeah, like, he's definitely got, like he's definitely like the thug, but I think he's got motives. Yeah. I don't think that his role is just kind of being the tough guy.
Yeah.
So Dobu wants Odakawa's help. And he also mentions that he did not tell his boss that he has the dash cam data. So whoever Dobu's boss is, which we can assume is probably the Black Taper.
Yeah.
he has not told him that he got the dash cam data from Big Daimon. So, and he does, and they don't want anybody knowing that Dobu has the dash cam data because it could get back to him. Mm-hmm. So why do they want the dash cam data to be kept away from the people who are actively looking for this girl? It's so weird. It's and really layered.
Strange. Yeah, like, where does, like, Big Diamond fit in all this as right. well? Or Little, well, not Little Diamond.
Little Diamond probably doesn't have much to do with
Little
it.
Little Diamond is just there.
He's just kind of following his, he's following his big brother. He's just...
Oh God!
He's learning all the—he's learning all the slurs for taxi cab drivers.
Oh God!
Young impressionable little Daimon.
Poor little Daimon.
So yeah, like, what is up with, like? I really can't, like, get a pin down on, like, why they don't want this data getting back to the boss. Like, it's like, yeah. Like, everybody's kind of doing their own thing here, despite everybody kind of being in factions with one another. It feels like everybody's kind of working behind the scenes with their own agendas now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing, like, groups splinter off in weird ways, despite being connected.
Yeah, and I think Odakawa and Dobu also go back at some point.
Oh yeah.
And 100%. And with him clearly having something at his house,
mm-hmm.
maybe Dobu has dealings for them, or maybe it's a family member, mm-hmm. or it could be so many other things, especially if the big boss taper is the reason they ran away in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I'm very curious about that myself.
Yeah.
Very, very curious.
There's layers here. They're setting up something, and it's going to be real cool. I can tell.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
So they finally get pulled over by the police because he's got his distress light on, and wouldn't you know it, it's Big Diamond.
Big Diamond comes strolling up. Oh, yeah.
And he's just like, what are you doing here? You stop that. Stop playing around with the damn SOS light, you jerk.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And like, Odakawa's just like, dude, there's a guy in my back seat with a gun. And Dobu, literally, who has the gun in plain sight, I don't know what he's talking about. And Big Diamond's just like, get the hell out of here.
Get out of here, yeah. They're just like, they don't know, and they just don't give a.
Yeah, he's just like, he's in on it. He's in on it.
Yeah, it's like, knock that off. Let's just move on.
So he returns to his police cruiser, and this is where we get our second flashback of some incident. But
yes.
this time it's like, it's not presented in the sort of like heavily filtered way that it was before. It's more in the animated style. We just kind of see an arm, and you can't really tell if that's a human arm or an animal arm with the way these characters are drawn now.
Right
like, we just see a shot of the ambulance, and then we see a shot of an arm, and that's all we get with this flashback. And this is the point where Big Daimon is just like, man, don't you just hate taxi drivers? And Little Daimon's like, fuck taxi drivers. They're terrible.
And then he's like, never believe a taxi driver. I think he might say that taxi driver.
There's one time where it's like all taxi drivers, which that may just be Little Daimon who hears it and just goes with all of them. I think every time Big Daimon says it, it's never trust that taxi driver.
And then
Little Daimon's like, I hate taxi drivers.
Yeah, fuck those assholes.
Yeah.
Fuck a taxi driver. Trust him. Look at Odakawa's face. Can you trust that face?
You cannot trust that face. Look at that face. That is the face of a man with nothing to lose.
It's true, honestly. Like, it really is.
So back in the cab, Dobu's still trying to get Odakawa to cooperate with him, and he just can't seem to get him to do it. Like, he's still he's putting up his front. He's just like, dude, whatever. You're not going to do mm-hmm. nothing. But then Dobu makes a not-so-thinly-veiled threat that harm may actually come upon Shirakawa if he doesn't. And that's the first time we see him break. He mentions Shirakawa, who he literally was on his way to go see. And he was just like, yo, I can hurt her if you want. And that's when he kind of finally is just like, he acquiesces and it's just like, fine, I'll do what
that's
I can.
That's true.
And then Dobu gets out of the car, and then there's a shot, the dash cam's wiring that's been cut. So they'll never have any evidence that Dobu was in the car with him.
Mm-hmm. Dobu's then, gonna cover them tracks.
And then after that, Dobu buries the gun. He buries it in a park, and I don't know if it's the same park where Odakawa is gonna meet Shirakawa or not. But mm-hmm. he buries it in what looks like a park.
Almost like he doesn't... Maybe he's going somewhere where he just can't be seen with it at the moment.
Yeah,
so
it's very likely. It may not be a big thing. It may just be... he's just at a place where the gun can be buried. So after this, Odakawa, he speeds off to go visit Shirakawa in the park where she said that she was going to be waiting for him. But when he does, he actually ends up almost running over this little Puma dude who's playing a cell phone game in the middle of the road.
Oh yeah, very smartly, of course.
Wow. And he gets some kind of rare drop, and he drops his phone.
Oh, the poor kid lost their rare drop.
Lost his phone. He's just having a bad one. But Odakawa just kind of like, he just kind of speeds off and like he just didn't even notice this poor kid.
Yeah, he was in his own world like that. Nothing else matters at this point. You're going full Batman.
Yeah.
Where is she?
Where my girl?
Yeah, this kid is it's just some kid in the way playing the phone game.
Like, what in the world? Like, is this going to come back? This has got to come back. You don't show this and it not be something.
Oh, of course. So
Odakawa meets Shirakawa in the park, and she said she'd be at, and they have another fun conversation. But in the end, Odakawa just kind of tells her that she doesn't need to get involved with him because he's got some Yakuza-type people on him, but he doesn't need to worry about her, Toad.
No, not one. No.
Because our girl, she knows capoeira.
This is one of the greatest parts.
This is... She does a little dance. She's like, look, I know capoeira. Check it out. And she jumps up and she does this little shimmy dance. And then throws one kick.
One kick, yeah.
If this girl does not kick somebody in the head by the end of this show, like, a full point is going to be deducted from the non-existent score that we're not giving it.
Exactly.
But they do it twice. They do the little animation twice. And it's just like, this is great. She's going to kick somebody by the end of this show.
Dude, that dance.
Oh my god, it's
worth it. Just please do that dance all the time, Neil.
It's just this back and forth little shuffle she does. They play this like hip hop beat over it. It's just the silliest damn thing. And like, if you don't know, capoeira is literally just kind of like a performative martial art. It's more akin to dancing and weight loss and stuff like that. It's not like, to my knowledge, it's not known to be like an actual combat martial art. But she's going to whoop some ass if any. She's going to take care of business if anybody steps to her. Don't worry.
That's so good. Oh my god.
Oh, it's such a good gag.
Jesus. Yes. It is.
But she makes a real push in this scene to kind of assure him that like she's very interested in him and like she's not going to back off. So and he seems to kind of just be like, well, there's not much I can do about that then.
I just like let it happen and good for you, Odakawa.
Yeah,
my
dude.
Goodness.
Yeah. Maybe this will help the sleep.
Yeah, it can definitely help the sleep, that's for sure.
And it's cute, like the scene ends, it's like she gets a call that she works the day shift, she's got to get to work, and he's just like, hey, I'll drive you there, and I won't run the meter. It's like, I like to think of that as his little his little gesture to her saying, yeah, I kind of like you too.
Yeah, it was really sweet. It's definitely like I'm digging you. All right, Shirakawa.
Like, we'll play with this. We'll work with it.
Like, look at these tusks, you know.
I have a very big tongue.
Ooh, very.
So back at Taiko's tavern, Odakawa and Kakihana, they have a conversation about love. And Odakawa finds out that our boy has been lying on his online profile. And that's how he snagged himself a date with a girl. And he's just like, mm-hmm. dude, this is not going to go how you think it's going to go.
Nah, he tries to warn. Kakihana is cocky.
He's very like, cocky.
It actually goes really well. Like, Kakihana, yeah. What are you doing?
Oh man. In the end it's just like he just lets it go though. He's like, man, it's your choice.
Yeah, hey, you know, run your accident, you know.
Just yep.
Run into good. The wall.
Sometimes it's kind of sad because like Kakihana is like just is on the ground, almost cries like, dude, come on, just let me have my dream. And it's like, oh god, it's
poor
too
Kakihana.
It's too pathetic to be mean at this point.
Plus she hosts like maybe a sweetheart,
maybe she maybe is like, yeah. Let's hope so for our boy's sake. They both seem like they kind of need a little love in their lives. Like, she's having a real bad time with her parents, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. And the whole group thing is there's got to be a mask and nobody cares about you. It's terrible. So maybe there's some light here. Maybe there's some good that can come from these two.
Shio needs attention. Kakihana needs to give something attention.
Yeah.
Well,
maybe there's something. Now, of course, that the whole lying about your income thing might come back and bite him.
Slight issue. Just a little bit.
It's a bit of an issue. Just a smidge.
It's a little poodle of an
poodle.
Issue.
Poodle.
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 Ooh.
Poodle.
Poodle?
I really don't know. This is just kind of like how SMPS suddenly became Egg Central. Like, I don't know how it happened. Now my whole server is just eggs.
Yeah, I noticed that. I looked the other day. I saw your icon.
Now the icon is an egg!
Yeah, I was like, wait, what?
I am a fan of jokes spiraling into stupidity. So, like, I say let it roll, man.
Absolutely.
All right, so a couple more things happen in this episode. On his way home, Odakawa gets a call from Shirakawa saying that Dr. Goriki did not actually come into work today and he's not been heard from.
Uh-oh.
That's concerning because nothing at all has tied that dude to anything in this story other than him just being Odakawa's doctor.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Ooh.
And so like, I don't know. I have no idea what could be going on there because so far he has no ties to anybody, really.
He was there for a pretty brief Odakawa scene and talked to Shirakawa, and that's it. So,
He had that one scene in the tavern where he told Kakihana, like, dude, whatever, your marriage shit, get out of my face.
True.
So that's just so I don't know what that's going to be. I can't even fathom a guess as to what that means.
Yeah.
And then the episode ends with Kakihana. He's stumbling home a little bit drunk, but he gets a text from Shio. She wants to meet up. She wants to say, hey, woo-hoo, come see me. And it's like, yo, dude, let's go.
Kakihana score.
And he gets there and she's like, she's under a little awning because it's raining. And like, she's kind of like shadowed out and he's kind of like, oh my God, she's so cute. Oh God, I lied about my income. Is she good? Oh God. And he's starting to kind of have to freak out now and hoping he's good enough. And she comes out and she's just super sweet. And she's like, let's go grab some tea somewhere. And they take off under an umbrella together. And it's just very sweet. But
big butt,
big ass butt,
big huge round
We notice that they are being tailed by Mystery Kiss's manager and an unknown very large polar bear man.
Yes. Yes. Yamamoto suddenly coming back in there, just creeping in at the end of that episode. Honestly, I have no idea what he's going to tie into this either.
Yeah, like, I didn't think he really had much to do with anybody in Mystery Kiss other than Rui. Like, I kind of thought he was just kind of tied to her, but, like, I don't know whether he's, like, they're, like, watching over She-Hulk for some reason, or... Because again, she seems kind of tertiary to that group. It seems like nobody, like, really cares about the other two members.
Yeah.
So, I don't know... what's going on here? Again, this is probably stuff that they're probably going to fill out as we go.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's kind of where things get dropped off and where we parked is kind of just on that note. It's smack dab in the middle of Mysteryville with so many questions. So many things to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything that kind of jumps to mind that you would like to say about the show while we kind of like wrap things up here?
I just think the thing that really encapsulated me the most about the show was the incredible back and forth of the characters.
Yeah.
While the visuals are like really damn good and like the emoting on the characters is incredible, just the dialogue that they have, like that. They can just be silly 1 second, but it's like all of it's like pretty heavy and emotional one way or the other, regardless if it's silly or not. And it just draws you in and you're just like soaked into that, like the back and forth feeling that they're feeling, kind of punching at each other with their, you know, words and stuff. And it's so consuming. Like I really enjoy the dialogue in general on this show. Is it just makes me want to learn so much more about everything and everybody and everything that's happening. I just want to like more.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah, the back and forth I think is definitely that, like the dialogue is just that is definitely the high point. There's so many great facial expressions. They do such a good job of making these characters emote and feel like over the top, but not in like an absolutely silly way. It's just they emote and it just kind of feels like a natural extension of their character. Yes.
I love all the facial expressions these characters have on them.
Yeah, they're really fun.
That's the mood.
Yeah, like everybody has got their own distinct style, like they got their own personality and looks and the way that they kind of bounce off of one another. Just lots of real good dynamics back and forth. What do you expect going forward?
A lot of murder, honestly.
Oh, we expect some murder? You think we're going to go down to Murder Town?
With the accident being so terrible as it is, I think there might be some murder that's going to happen here. There seems a lot to be a lot hanging on a lot of different shady characters as backs, and they're not afraid to be shady towards each other.
Yeah, like the way that all of the factions are kind of like splintering off and doing their own thing despite being directly associated. It's just, and they've left a lot of things there for us to think about after a mere 3 episodes. Like, I'm so eager to jump back in for another 3 at the end of the week. Like, I'm just like, I've been thinking about this show almost nonstop since, like, we finished those 3 episodes. It's just like, it's the most, like I said, like, it's been a long time since I've watched a show that immediately just grabbed me the way this one does. And it happens in its opening minutes. Like, that little montage is, like, all you need to know of just, like, what the tone of this show is going to be. Like, what they're doing. They show you so many intriguing things. But also, just, like, you kind of get a feel for the city as a character itself, almost. Just everything just feels so well-designed and well-realized. And I'm just so excited to get right back to it.
Yeah, I want to marathon it, but I'm good. Honestly, pacing it out and talking about it kind of makes it sit a lot better.
And it gives you time to think about Like, and start formulating your own thoughts, because now you've got this conversation that we've had that where you could, like, oh, well, now I'm just starting to think about this, and like going forward, now there's more things to kind of like keep tucked in the old brain pocket. Like, I have one or two theories that I'm not going to say right now, because I feel like I have a couple ideas about what I think the end game is here. But I don't want to throw them out too early. It's not that I want to be wrong, and it's not that I want to be right or spoil anything. I just kind of like, I want to kind of like marinate in it for a bit to see. But I've got like some thoughts and some things that like I noticed that I very specifically did not point out yet that just kind of jumped out at me and like were bothering me from minute one, where I'm just like, ooh, is that intentional or is that a stylistic choice?
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh,
really interested.
I will talk about it on an episode at some point, but I don't want to do it too early because I don't want to influence anybody else's thoughts on what the show may be.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. So with the first three episodes in the bag, we are going to watch episodes 4 through 6 next time. So if you would like to keep up with us, that is what we'll be watching. Odd Taxi episodes 4, 5, and 6. So before we bop on out of here, Toad, do you have anything that you would like to plug?
#poodle.
#poodle.
Poodle.
Poodle.
To plug, not so much. I guess my stream is where I'm at every single day. I have streamed for almost 420
days. Almost 420. 420 is coming up this week.
3 days, I want to say. 420. So yeah, 420 is going to happen real soon. That's going to be a blast. But I stream every day at twitch.tv/toad22484. You can pretty much find me at toad22484 anywhere. Twitter, Twitch, all that. But I also want to say a huge thank you to Polly for putting all this together. She does such a phenomenal job. I cannot tell you how important this character sheet is, because I would not have remembered any of these people otherwise.
I remember you saying early on that character names were hard for you to keep track of, and I know that we are watching a Japanese show, and I know that Japanese names, that if you're not familiar with seeing those types of names all the time, that they can be hard to keep track of as well. So I wanted to, so like that was the first thing that popped in my mind. It's like, I'm going to do a character sheet, and then I will update it every time we watch new episodes, so everything can be updated, so that you will always be able to kind of look at it and know who's who. But yeah, putting that stuff together was really fun, and I like, you know, you want the show to go as smoothly as possible, so like if you're able to communicate better about the show, we have a better show.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It was in our best interest.
That's completely fair, but the effort you go through is never unappreciated. So,
well, I appreciate
thank
that
you very much.
I appreciate your appreciation.
Poodle.
You can find me at twitch.tv/poodleplushie. Oh my god, I'm gonna commission that. I am gonna actually commission having my model drawn as Rui. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna commission somebody
that's
to draw
great.
My
oh yes,
I'm gonna
please
have
fantastic.
My model drawn as Rui Nakai. Yeah. Alright. That's it. Alright, you can find me at twitch.tv/polyplushy, twitter.com/polyplushy, all that fun stuff. So until next time, get yourself out there, go watch episodes 4 through 6, and we'll catch it. I all my other podcasts have a fancy sign off, but I never thought of one for this one, so I guess I'll just say poodle.